Well, hello there, and welcome to Radio Arcadia. Chris Marcus here with you as always on January 28th. I apologize, it's been a few weeks since our last podcast. But as I'm sure you can imagine, I've just been so overwhelmed with the news of the Europeans deciding to do their best Federal Reserve impersonation. And perhaps you've caught the news over the past couple weeks. First, a couple weeks ago, we had the Swiss deciding to drop their peg to the euro, which, if you remember back in 2011, as the U.S. was blowing through the debt ceiling again on its way to getting downgraded by S&P, gold was up around 1,900 bucks, silver was getting back in the 40s, and when the U.S. got downgraded and a lot of that money started flowing into the Swiss franc, of course, they started getting worried that, God forbid, their currency might actually have some strength and value. So to dilute it, they started buying euros, which were being printed at the time in the midst of the first couple chapters of the Greek crisis, which in additionally has reared its head again in these past couple weeks. But in addition to the Swiss dropping the peg to the euro, perhaps they knew it was coming. We've talked here before about the Europeans offering this fantastic deal to savers where they give you a negative interest rate. Now, again, if you're not sure what a negative interest rate is, I certainly can't blame you on that one. It's hard to imagine that such a thing exists, but basically, the Europeans, under this claim that there's not enough inflation, have decided to make interest rates negative, basically meaning that you put 100 euros in a bank, and in your best case scenario, a year later, you get back 98 or 99, which is always a baffling arrangement. And now that doesn't even factor in the inflation or the possibility that these banks just blow out completely, which if you actually look into their balance sheet and study what's going on behind closed doors is quite a significant risk. I mean, I think by any rational accounting metric, they're all insolvent anyway. It's just the printed cash that's kept them afloat. But in either case, since the negative interest rates weren't enough money printing, and keep in mind, anytime you hear any of these things like negative interest rates or, you know, credit or quantitative easing or all these things, they're all just different translations for printing money. So since apparently the negative interest rates weren't enough printed money, last week the ECB, which is the European Central Bank, essentially the European version of the Fed, decided to become the same as the Fed and launch quantitative easing, which means that they're just going to print money and outright monetize debt each month, similarly to how the Fed was doing. Again, this is under the guise of boosting the economy, and somehow this baffling premise that we've been sold for so long that if the economy is weak, all you do is print up more cash and somehow that fixes it. And what I find fascinating is really when you dig into the coverage, the media coverage, or actually even what these guys are actually saying, it's incredible when they talk about how they're really concerned that inflation is slowing down. And they talk about it as if it's almost synonymous with growth. And sometimes it's hard to wonder if they're actually serious or just confused or not understanding what inflation actually is. But a simple example is that, let's say you have a house that's worth $100,000 and an apple costs a dollar. Now, if the price of your house goes up to $200,000, but the price of the apple goes up to $4, well, your house seems like it's more expensive, or worth more, rather, but what you can actually buy, what it's actually tradable for, you can obtain less apples. Again, we're talking about a simple economy where perhaps apples are the only thing you can get, but when it comes, because again, what it, it's like comparing $100 today versus $100 50 years ago. it's a much different thing. And the inflation is what has eroded the value, which is why you see so many people are really struggling just to keep up with the basic cost of living. In fact, something I've been thinking about in the past couple of weeks is that really, if you imagine, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that a majority of the people on the globe at this point are not out buying BMWs or crystal goblets, but just trying to figure out a way to have a place to live, food to eat, and be able to take care of the basic necessities of their family. And I really have to imagine that just that level of living was probably a lot easier 200 years ago, before we had all this technology, before we had all these machines. And it's amazing how, you know, you would think, wow, well, it should have been so much harder then, and all this stuff we've figured out since then would theoretically make it easier, but which is that what normally would happen in a rational world, because that's called productivity. You know, if you start out and you're catching fish and you're using the fishing pole, and then maybe catch one or two fish a day, and then, you know, you eventually you build a net, and then you start catching 10 fish a day, it becomes easier. You can do more with the same or less amount of resources, which is the whole goal, is we learn to do things better, whatever it may be. Life is supposed to become easier. Now, of course, enter the political and banking class, where they have their own version of how economics work, and they try and make this incredible argument that when the price of something comes down due to productivity, that's a bad thing. And enter this argument, well, we don't have enough inflation, the prices are dropping, we have to save everyone from this fear of inflation, coincidentally, by printing a lot of money that is used to fund government spending. A big chunk of it goes to the banks, and in the end, you have 30 or 40% of the U.S., forgive me if my numbers are slightly off, but I know there's a huge chunk of people, I think it's around that number, that are actually living on food stamps in America, which is, and I don't say that flippantly or lightly, it almost makes me sad to imagine that in this land that has been known for so long as the land of opportunity, during the year and a half when I lived in Europe, seeing how so many foreigners still look to the U.S. as the place where you can come and make your dream come true, but then when you see what's going on underneath the surface, under the hood of it all, you know, it's unfortunately a much different story, and you can see how much people are struggling, and you can see how they can print enough cash to boost the stock market to new record highs, inflate new bond bubbles. Of course, there's a new real estate bubble going, and it gives the appearance to many that things are going along, swimming along fine. But again, when you look underneath the surface, obviously, well, perhaps not obviously, but in my opinion, I think you could really make the argument that what has been the most vicious enemy to the day-to-day lives of Americans and people around the globe, well, perhaps politicians and bankers would be top of that list, but along with that would be the inflation that's just made the cost of living so unbearable for so many, at the same time when it's so hard for people to do business with all the heavy regulation and the rules and just the cost of complying with a set of rules and codes from the government and the IRS that are always changing. No one knows what they're going to be, can flip on a dime whenever the next group of politicians is elected. And anyway, I think that it's actually more similar than many realize in Europe, and it's incredible to see that, again, here we are this late in the game, and the Europeans just picking up right where the Fed left off. The Japanese have been doing the same thing for the past couple of years, and now at the moment, the Federal Reserve has been slowing down their own dose of inflation, at least as they tell to the public. I sometimes wonder if we ever really know how much money they are or aren't printing. Because certainly, if you're a Fed watcher or have read any of the books or done research about the Fed, or perhaps read G. Edward Griffin's The Creature from Jekyll Island, where you find out really the true nature of what's going on behind some closed doors, I always wonder, do we really know how much money is being printed? I mean, based on the things that the Fed has acknowledged, the inappropriate behavior that, not even what we are accusing them of, but that they've publicly acknowledged, and some of the crimes that have been committed, I mean, certainly, if I were them and were doing what they were doing, I always wonder, are they printing a lot of money and not just saying anything? Although, I do believe to some degree that they have slowed down the presses, and we talked a couple of weeks back, a few episodes ago, about the decline in oil, where you haven't really seen many people provide a substantial reason for why there's such a huge decline. Yes, there's OPEC at play, and there is new oil sources in the U.S. from fracking and the new technologies that are available. But what I think has been overlooked is the effect of the end of the quantitative easing policies, because if you really do have all this free money no longer being printed, well, then seeing collapse in asset prices is exactly what you would expect. And now, of course, now the Europeans are getting started again with the printing, which has led to the result that the dollar, ironically enough, has been strengthening lately, as amazing as that sounds. And of course, the value of a strong currency is that the things that you can buy are so much cheaper, especially the things that are imported. It has more buying power. Of course, the government and bankers have convinced people that that's a bad thing and want to make sure that anytime you buy any imported goods or want to travel or spend the money, that you should just let them print it away for you. Which certainly I could do without, and I think prices are plenty high enough already. And I mean, another way of looking at it is that if you've been out there driving, as you've seen gas go from the high threes and in some cases over $4 down to below $2, it's amazing. As I walk back and forth to pick up food every day, and see, I walk past this one gas station and see the price just plummeting on a regular basis. It's incredible. But I wonder if there's anyone else out there that's saying, oh man, this sucks. I can't believe I can't pay so much for gas anymore. This is ruining my day. Bankers, please, we need more inflation. Please help us. Save the children. Anyway, I digress. Actually, maybe I don't digress. I've never really completely knew what that phrase meant, but just thought it was something kind of cool to say. But in either case, perhaps ending this podcast with a little bit of a silly statement is a great way to notate the silliness of the government with the respect that they deserve. It's if you're watching this and it seems like it's a science fiction movie, and just as if you're watching people who must be from some other planet, you're not alone, because it really is as truly insane as it sounds. But again, fortunately, I hope that these podcasts have been helpful in allowing you to read through what's going on and read through some of these illusions, because this is almost Soviet-style propaganda right here. Maybe we'll have to rephrase that and say CIA-style propaganda, which is all designed to take advantage of people and leave the government and these agencies with more control, which I think is incredibly unfortunate. But the more you understand, the more you can shift the perspective and see what's really going on, which certainly for me was a big shift, because it's drastically different from what we were taught in grade school and college, and certainly if you've grown up in the U.S. or Europe in this very centralized way of thinking, it's what we've gotten used to. And it can take a little while to really start to see it in its totality of what's going on. And But that's why we do the podcast here for you, and that's why we've created ArcadiaEconomics.com, which I encourage you to visit, and you can sign up there and get our weekly update, which really is designed to help you be prepared and start seeing through this so you can take action and not have to live in fear of this anymore. Also, when you hit that subscribe button right next to the podcast, then you get notified and keep you posted every time there's a new episode out. And again, really the purpose is just to make sure that there's an easy way to get a real true life version of what's going on. It was amazing as I went through this Wall Street career and started unraveling what the difference was between what we're told and what actually is. And it was really the emphasis for creating Arcadia to help people come along in their own journey and hopefully learn from some of my past mistakes. So with that said, again, I thank you for tuning in today. I hope you found this helpful as always, and join us at ArcadiaEconomics.com. Hit the subscribe button on the podcast, and we will see you again soon. And with that said, I hope you are well and at peace wherever you are. God bless you all, and have a good night.